Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Good evening, this is Love Sport Radio and I am Matt Beadle. It is time for the Leeds United fan show on Love Sport. A bit of background noise there, we're not quite sure what that was. There's something coming into the studio, crikey. Is it the dark cloud that descended over Elland Road last weekend at around 4:45pm on Saturday because a first defeat of the season for Leeds in the Championship to Swansea in the 90th minute. A Wayne Routledge goal took the spoils for Swansea. They remain unbeaten. They remain top of the league. I am joined by John McKenzie, as ever, from All Stats, aren't we? And Jack Hardy as well. How are we?
All right. I think our visibility is just about improving after the the fog of despair descended over us when Swansea came in.
Yeah, I'm all right. You know, we sort of had it coming to us. We put a lot of positive stuff out on our feed this week, and we've been relentlessly trolled by Swansea fans ever since. We put out a preview which suggested that they were lucky to be where they were in the table, which went down very well.
This was a statistically based preview.
Yeah. We were just looking at the way that Swansea had looked in terms of particularly XG. They've scored more than they should, and they've conceded fewer than they should, and so yeah, their position in the table is looking a little bit lucky, fortuitous. So we got all of those people along who say, oh, you know, well, when the tables are started by stats, that's when we'll, yeah. So
there's always a voice that comes with that, isn't there? There always has to be a voice that you put on with that.
That's the voice, yeah. That is the voice.
The stats voice.
I always find a certain amount of suspicion that comes with stats that sound like they're a bit too good to be true. Because I think with Swansea, it was like they hadn't beaten us at home since about the 1940s. And as soon as I hear something like that, I think, well,
1949. Only the second time in their history that they've won.
So there's been a lot of kind of history-defining stats that we've been shattering in the last 6 months or so.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of stats, we always start the show, John, with the stat of the week. Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah, so the stat this week is we've played about 550 minutes in the league so far. We have only been losing for four of those minutes. So that's my stat for the week. That comes courtesy of Josh Hobbs, who works with me at All Stats, aren't we? So
thank you, Josh. Wow, that's an incredible stat. However, an important one.
Yeah.
It was tough to watch, I've got to say. I mean, I wasn't at the game, of course, but watching what I did in terms of the extended highlights of that game, listen, what, 61% possession? We've spoken at length about the XG. Again, it came to the fore in this particular game. But Leeds were in the ascendancy. Leeds had the chances, right? Leeds deserved, am I correct in saying that Leeds deserved to win this game?
Yeah, I'd say so. You've mentioned the possession, 61%, as you said, overall. 65% Leeds possession in the second half in particular. So it's, I think, particularly galling for us to have conceded a goal in the second half because we were increasingly dominant as the game went on and changed things up to attack a little bit more. We brought on Helder Costa and went with two quite attacking forwards side by side against with Nketiah in the middle. And so you kind of think at that point, you're expecting maybe an unlucky draw and thinking, oh, it was just annoying that we just didn't put our chances away, and then to sort of concede a sort of fairly scrappy corner at the end from a corner that was given away quite scrappily as well. Mm. And you just kind of think it's just a whole concatenation of events that just conspired against us, and it's what we expected from last season all over again. So yeah, hard to take, but you know, the stats are still good, and you trust the process. That's what you do. You trust the process.
We should get a dinger on this show for the stats are good and we trust the process. I'm going to tally them up until the end of the season. But you did mention the word scrappy there, John. Jack, the goal itself, I mean, you don't mind if you get beaten by a clean strike, but he shunted it into the ground and it bobbled along past Kiko Casilla.
Well, yeah, it took on a slightly nightmarish quality for me as well, because I happened to be watching on a Swans fan TV.
So oh, no.
The Swansea commentator screaming after kind of long stretches of radio silence that have been going on throughout the game. So that rubbed it in slightly worse. But, you know, it's been a consistent weakness, really. I mean, it's been the one area I think it'd be fair to say that we've been lacking on a bit is just set pieces. We've lost the height with Pontus Janssen, and we've gone to Brentford over the summer. And whilst I think overall we tend to control corners better than I think some people like to give the impression that we do, but undeniably, we've conceded a few goals from scrappy corners just like that.
Yeah, I think it's a bit complacent perhaps as well. You know, it's the 90th minute, we've been dominant in the game, and it's just a silly set piece, and you lose concentration a little bit, and there was suspicion that maybe some of the players could have been a little bit sharper on the corner. But it's just, I don't know, it's so unlucky that it's hard to sort of rationalise it. As soon as you start rationalising, it's just kind of like, well, you know, you could blame it on anyone. You could blame it on Jack Harrison for giving away the corner, or you could blame it on any sort of series of events. But at the end of the day, we gave them an outside chance on the edge of the box from a corner, and it, like you said, it was sort of shunted into the floor, bundled past one of their players, almost hit one of their players, and then sort of bundles into the back post. So,
and sometimes, as hard as it may seem, you could probably give a bit of credit to the other team as well. They defended very well for a lot of the game. And,
yeah, of course.
You know, they had the chance there, and then they took it. So,
well, that's an interesting point, because there's been some quite good literature this week about the way that Swansea set up, and Steve Cooper actually came out after the game, and he was quite defensive of the fact, I mean, he was very defensive in the way that Swansea played, but he was quite defensive of the fact that Leeds deserved to win it and Leeds had the possession. And he almost said, look, hold on a second, I worked hard on this and I worked to counteract what Leeds were setting out under Marcelo Bielsa. One particular quote was that, you know, he said, we felt there were spaces with the clear way of playing, a good way of playing, but we felt there were certain parts of the pitch around the deep midfield where we could get into pockets and turn and hit them on fast attacks.
Yeah, I think the quote that he said was, you know, that Leeds have obvious weaknesses.
That's the one. Really, I didn't want to say it.
It really didn't go down very well with the Leeds fans base, understandably. But I think there's a phenomenon of beating Marcelo Bielsa, right? Which is managers then come out and put it down to them being better tactically than him. I think it doesn't happen quite so much with other managers, because other managers aren't really sort of touted as being great tactical minds. So as soon as we saw it with Nathan Jones as well last year when Stoke beat us, As soon as a team beats us, then they say, well, look, we had these tactics and then we won, therefore, you know, obviously our tactics were just better than Leeds. And look, I like the way that I like Steve Cooper. I like the way that his team set up. I think they're probably a little bit too hesitant. I think they're a little bit slow in transition, but I don't think that the things that he said particularities that they jumped on, I don't think they actually were the reasons why they won the game. That he mentioned Mike van der Hoorn as well, pushing into space, happened twice in the game, and one time he sort of played the ball out to Jake Bidwell, who lost the ball, and then the other time they won a free kick and Bersant Salina hit the wall, and you kind of think, well, yeah, okay, that's good, that's how you play against Leeds, but just because it comes off twice doesn't mean to say that I don't think it's really an obvious weakness. And then there was, yeah, like you say again, there's always going to be pockets of space. Like, you have to try and fit 11 players on the field, and the reason why Leeds are so great is because they're so good at manipulating space. So it will always be hard to find those spaces, but at the end of the day, you know, they had two shots on target, one of which was the goal. They really didn't create much from open play, and he's just got to admit that it was a smash and grab, and everyone else did. So I think that's why everyone got annoyed.
And that's the thing. I mean, it didn't really strike me as particular tactical mastery, because, I mean, they just packed everybody. They packed the box, really. There wasn't any space to play in, and that was, you know, difficult for us. And, you know, credit to them, but it wasn't like it sort of tactically outwitted Bielsa at any point, I wouldn't say.
Yeah, and the point I made in the tactical preview is that the way that Swansea play is by sitting their double pivot. So they've got two central midfielders who sit a little bit deeper, and they sit them just in front of the centre backs, and then they push their full backs really far up the pitch, and that's where they attack down the wings. Against Leeds, they just couldn't do that. So they had their two central defenders deep, their two central midfielders deep, and then their full backs had to stay deep as well. So they were really quite compact. For obvious reasons, and so it just meant that they didn't really have any of the impetus that they usually have when they go forward. And even just looking at the involvement that Borja Bastón had in the game, he just had no involvement at all. I don't think he had any touches in the box. He only had I think minimally double figures touches as well, and the majority of his passes were in his own half. So it's just little things like that where you have to look and see the bigger context. But yeah, look, Swansea have done everything you need to do to beat Leeds, but you also need a huge amount of luck for that to happen, and they've had it. So
do you think it's now, because of everything that happened last season with Spygate and Bielsa coming out with all his statistical analysis, do you think it's become a bit of a go-to for opposition managers to almost up their game in a sense, but actually refer so heavily towards their strategy and their stats after the game?
I think it would make sense, yeah. I think if you're, especially if you're a young manager, and someone, like, don't get me wrong, both Nathan Jones and Steve Cooper are very tactically astute managers. I just think that, you know, as soon as they get their result, they're immediately jumping on this, well, you know, we had tactics too, you know, therefore give us more credit. And I just kind of think that's that's totally fine, but you have to, you use tactics and then you still admit that you're lucky. And we've been saying a lot of Leeds have been using tactics and they've been unlucky, so it happens the other way around as well.
Indeed. Just a bit of news on Eddie Nketiah. He scored after just 4 minutes for England under 21. So that's a great start for him. Could have scored at the weekend. I mean, was there a question to say he should have been slightly braver, or do you think it's just an unlucky chance?
I mean, looking back at the replays, it looked like the keeper had got a hand to it before Eddie had managed to get ahead to it, which would, I think would have misdirected it just enough to sort of explain why it went into the side netting rather than him doing what he usually does and just tucking it straight away. So I don't think it was as easy a chance as it looked, you know.
Yeah, and there was the chance where he's in behind as well and he didn't manage to get the shot away cleanly enough. I think usually he would probably have just outpaced the defender and got the shot away as well. But yeah, both, I mean, tough chances, but particularly the header, you know, that sort of thing. Yeah, keeper perhaps gets his hand to it, but it could go anywhere. And it's just the difference between that little deflection and it going wide perhaps. But yeah, it's hard to take. Bamford as well had a couple of fairly decent chances, particularly a header that he should definitely have hit the target for and he didn't. So the same old frustrations again.
Helder Costa did his best to keep hold of the ball in the corner as he did tackle after tackle after tackle. Incredible attempt. That, just a bit of admin before we move on. Conor Shaughnessy has joined Mansfield on loan in before the deadline shut, and also Lawrence De Bock as well has moved on loan to Sunderland. An interesting signing, De Bock. What happened there?
Well, I think that what probably has happened is Sunderland have rung round every club in the UK being like, we're desperately in need of a left back, do you have anyone? Because I think if they'd watched him play, there's no way that they would have picked him up. And he's probably the worst player I think I've seen in a Leeds shirt since we've gone down.
Because this is a guy who came to the club with relatively decent pedigree.
Yeah, I mean, it never really made particular sense. There are a few howlers, I think, that live long in the memory of Leeds United fans. But I suppose because he's been disappearing out on loan and stuff, memories fade. And when deadline day comes rolling around and you're desperate for a left-back, I think people take what they can get by that point.
Yeah, I spoke to a couple of guys from Swansea who kind of know what's going on behind the scenes, and they suggested it was a little bit more of a sort of slapdash end of the window job where they just needed a left-back and they were happy to take what they could get, really. So.
Okay, and Calvin Phillips edging closer, we keep hearing it, to a new deal. It's almost like he's taking baby steps every few weeks.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on, but clearly there's clearly negotiations taking place, and I think at this point now you should just need to get them done, really. And he's obviously not moving till the earliest next season, so I guess for everyone concerned it's just easier to get out of the way and get it done. But there's clearly pressure on he's putting pressure on the club to get as good a deal as he can. Obviously that's within his rights, but I think Leeds have a very specific wage structure that I think they're being very careful with, because they don't want to just blow open the whole of their wage packet, especially after we got rid of I think 31 players this window. So they're really trying to get the wage budget down. So I think they just happen to be a little bit more careful with that. So that might explain it.
I saw Phil Hay had reported earlier that I think part of the deal is going to include the fact that his release clause can be triggered, which will protect him in the event that we don't get promoted this time. So, I mean, it looks like it is very much kind of a boom or bust situation with us. We either go up with him or we have to be prepared to lose him for a decent amount.
It's not even a question that Leeds United won't go up this season, Jack.
Trust the process.
I like your process.
Trust the process, and the stats are good. This is the Leeds United fan show on Love Sport. We're going to be speaking to comedian and diehard Leeds fan Mickey P. Kerr next. Love Sport. This is the Leeds United fan show on Love Sport. Myself, Matt Beadle, here with John McKenzie of All Stats Aren't We. We are joined by Jack Hardy as well. We are going to be speaking to Mickey P. Kerr, the comedian and diehard Leeds fan, in a moment. But just before that, something that we haven't discussed, the news that Jermaine Beckford has hung up his boots, chap. Some great moments in a Leeds shirt. Do you have particular fond memories that you'd like to recall?
I think there's only one memory that anybody remembers at all.
We all know what you're going to say.
After you.
I mean, you know, it was the goal that started with the worst possible touch imaginable at Man United when he... Who was it that was on the cross? Was it Johnny Howson from deep?
Or it might even have been Richardson, was it?
Really?
No, maybe it was Hailson. I should know this, really, shouldn't
so
I?
So it was the worst first touch ever, and then tucked it in, and it's the moment that I think will live longer. You know, that's when we're in League One as well, almost any other goal in the last century. It's crazy.
Yeah, and then there was the final day of the season goal as well, which was lovely to see us get out of League One. Yeah. So he's been a great servant to the club, and he was a fun player to watch. It's been few and far between the fun players we've had to watch in the time that we've been down, but certainly scored some absolute belters.
And some genuinely dazzling goals as well, wasn't it?
So, for sure,
we didn't have many of those at that particular time. And Becchio was always there, but he never quite scored. It wasn't the same, but lifting the ball up and getting it in.
Yeah, I was always a little bit surprised that we didn't quite. He didn't quite hit the same heights with in the Premier League, because I thought, he almost had everything that it took to be at least a semi decent player for a mid table club, but it just never really came off.
Didn't he score that goal? He charged about half the pitch for Everton. Yeah. I seem to remember.
Yeah,
but yeah, I mean. Sorry,
no, absolutely. Yeah, he did. He was one of those players who he was at Everton and he got his break in the Premier League. And I think he had a great season, scored that great goal that you mentioned, and then left and went to the Championship. And sometimes you wonder, was it just a lucky season? And the manager, David Moyes, at the time thought, you know what, I've had him good for 38 games, but perhaps he needs to move on now.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, there were certainly some games where he would be a bit sort of non-existent from time to time, but the type of quality he delivered and the way that he could just snatch something from nothing was, he did not belong in League One at the time, that's for sure. I mean, and that shows by the level of the jump that he made up straight afterwards.
Yeah, I think there's some players who they just sort of feel EFL, don't they? And I think he's probably one of them. I can think of so many good goals that he scored outside of the Premier League that I just think that with him, he probably had fond memories of playing in the Championship and relished the chance to do that again. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see what does next. It was nice to hear him on LUTV doing the co-coms, which was certainly better than Ben Parker. So
got mobbed outside Elland Road as well. People charging him down and yelling at him, which is extraordinary. Real cult hero. Yeah.
Did he really? Mm. I remember seeing Jermaine Beckford. Actually, the first time I ever saw him was when he was Wealdstone. Was it Wealdstone? If that's right. As a kid when he was in non-league, and I remember assistant manager of the club at the time said, you just wait until you see this guy because he is absolutely rapid. Mm. And that was one of his gifts. You always used to hear of these players like the Jermaine McSporrans of this world that were in non-league and they were so quick. Sometimes they had no control over what they were doing, but so quick with the ball. That was chat about Jermaine Beckford. I'd love to know what Mickey P. Kerr thinks about Jermaine Beckford, because he is on the line now. Mickey P. Kerr, comedian and diehard Leeds fan. Mickey, how are you doing?
I'm very well, thanks, mate. Yeah, Jermaine Beckford, what a legend. What an absolute legend. I remember him. He scored about three goals, didn't he? That were just incredible. I can't remember who he was playing for, someone like League Two.
Doncaster, I think it was.
Was it Doncaster?
It was a Doncaster goal where. I think was it Scunthorpe, maybe? I shouldn't confuse those two.
Yeah, I think Scunthorpe rings about in the area, really tight control, and top left in, I think it was. Yeah, what a great player. He's just retired, is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
I didn't know he was still playing. I'm honest with you. Yeah, well, that was, but it was, you know, his legend is Jermaine Beckford.
Wow, a legend.
He got about that lead. Mm. It's rare you get a striker that bangs in 30 plus in a season. I'll get to anywhere near that. Chris Wood was the last to do it for us. Mm. But Jermaine Beckford, and it was a meaningful one as well, because it got us out of the mire that is League One. Into the ditch that is the Championship.
Well, Mickey, you have just returned from Edinburgh Fringe. Great to have you on the show. What was it like out there?
That was good, mate. It's good. Terrible weather. But it was good. I was living in student digs, which was nice reminiscing. I was basically living as a student, going to bed between 3 a.m. and 6 a.m, getting up at midday. I was living with Whose Line Is It Anyway? From those guys, Tony Slattery.
Absolutely, yeah, great show.
Foster, yeah, so it was great, yeah, coming back home drunk and then doing comedy sketches with Tony Slattery in the kitchen. It was really good.
Hey, it's John. I was just wondering, how do you balance being a Leeds fan when you're on tour? Is it easy enough to do? Do you find yourself being able to watch the games, or do you find...
No, it's difficult. It's the worst bit about... But there's two things about being a comedian that I find really annoying. One is the constant travelling, which sometimes it's nice, obviously, but you do a lot of miles. I think I did 30,000 miles in the car last year alone. So, and then the other thing is, on Saturday, most people have the Saturday off, and that's their time to watch football and Got well on the road, and I'll go work wherever it might be. And I don't get the chance to do that, but I have to kind of book that. It's often they made paydays, so it's difficult. That's the most annoying thing. But I've got I can watch it on the phone, so I do a lot of that, and I get to as many midweek ones as I can.
And how do you strike the balance, Mickey, between trying to make people laugh and then when we have a crushing defeat like we did on Sunday, trying to shake off the despair?
Well, you put it to back your mind, you know, it's like anything, it's job into his work. But that was rather frustrating. You probably got a lot with the Swans, but I was watching in Cardiff, actually. I was over in Cardiff, and the first half was going great, and then I went back to my hotel, got the second half. I missed the first 10 minutes of the second half, but then I just couldn't believe it. We didn't quite play as well in the second half as we did in the first, but we just dominated the game, didn't we, again? But, rather frustrating. But the first loss has got to come, hasn't it? So it's just a shame that we've got a 2-week break now. Mm. I hate these international breaks.
But with six games under our belt now in the league, how are you feeling? Are you still feeling positive, even despite that result at the weekend?
I find that result, it's a fantastic performance. That top of the league was doing very well. There won't be many tougher tests than...
Oh, I think we've lost Mickey there. A dodgy line, unfortunately, chaps. We couldn't properly hear him, sadly, because he's a funny fella. I'm sure he had many a tale to tell. Edinburgh Fringe, by the way, have you ever been?
I've never been. And I went to university in Scotland, so it's more shame me, I suppose.
John, that's a sin, yes. It's brilliant up there. Absolutely brilliant. The atmosphere is incredible. Actually, something I want to pick up on, what he said there about the international break. He hates the international break. Now, we had the Chelsea fan show on before this, and those guys were saying it's very much club over country at Chelsea, very much based towards Chelsea. They'd rather see Chelsea win the Premier League than they would see England win next summer's European Championships. Where do you guys sit on this?
Well, I follow Scotland, so
right,
it's definitely club over country.
1-0 up against Russia at the moment.
Yeah, no, that's good. Also, I think just working as a football journalist, I really enjoy the international break because it just gives me a bit of a break from the All Stats on We stuff, particularly, which takes a fair amount of my time up. It's nice not having to do a preview and a review for one weekend. So maybe that's me being really selfish. So I quite like the international break.
I mean, I'm totally the opposite. having lost as much face as we did on Sunday, you want to restore it pretty quickly. So that's a very, very long 2 weeks you're going to have to sit through. I mean, I suppose it's nice because you see a couple of the young promising players. We saw Ryan Edmondson scored for the England under-19s yesterday for his first time in the Lions shirt, which is nice. But, you know, nice is about as far as it would go, you know, I'd put it, to be honest.
Yeah, absolutely. And next, we are going to be speaking to Andrew Dalton, another stats man, John. I'm looking forward to this. A stat overload on the Leeds United fan show on Love Sport.
This is Love Sport.
Good evening, this is Love Sport. I'm Matt Beadle and this is the Leeds United fan show with you through to 9 p.m, half an hour to go. I'm joined by John McKenzie, as always, from All Stats, aren't we? And Jack Hardy is in the studio as well. On the line now, I'm delighted to say that we have Andrew Stats Dalton, match reporter for Leeds United Women, joining us. How are you, Andrew?
Very well, thank you. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Thank you for coming on. Now, we're going to get on to Leeds United Women in a sec, but I've got a question for you, Andrew, because I am led to believe, through the grapevine and the Twitter and the Twitter sphere, I'm sure you may have been asked this many times, and I'm sure you might be aware of what's coming next, but is it true that you can name every single Leeds United fixture in order, all competitions, from 1989 to the present day?
I can do every league fixture from 89-90. The problem from there on in, there was Benefactor Systems Cup games, Johnson Pate Trophy Cup games all over the place. So I can do every league fixture since we played Newcastle in August 1989 and lost 5-2 and Mickey Quinn scored 4.
Well, I mean, this is staggering, and I wouldn't be in my job if I didn't put this to the test, of course. This is very much like a TV show called You Bet. Do you remember this TV show?
Yeah, remember it well, with Matthew Kelly back in the day.
There you go. Yes, Darren Day succeeded him as well. Now, this was, of course, anybody that doesn't know You Bet, was when people, members of the public, used to come on and do these extraordinary challenges and put them to a panel of celebrities, and it would be the most random collection of celebrities that you could imagine from all walks of celebrity life. But they'd be there, and they would say yes or no as to whether this person person could do what they were going to do. And it's just like this, where Andrew would say, I can name every single fixture, and we would chuck a date at him and he would be able to do it. So I'm going to do just that, right?
I'm on the spot now.
You are. I'm going to be Matthew Kelly, and I'm going to put to you the 6th of September, so today's date, 2008.
Yeah. Leeds 5, Crewe Alexander 2.
That's absolutely unbelievable. I mean, that is incredible. I'm not going to ask you for scorers because that's ridiculous, but the fact you know that is incredible. I've got one more.
Oh, go on then.
Right, so it's not today's date. It's going to be Saturday, the 11th of March, 1995.
Chelsea 0, Leeds 3.
Right, I'm leaving. I'm leaving the studio. This show can never, ever be topped, Andrew. That's absolutely incredible.
Fantastic.
What a
legs. This has got legs, this feature. I like it.
It really has. Wow, we should get you on every week just to ask that one question. But Andrew, listen, match reporter for Leeds United Women. We've got to talk about this because women's football is booming. They're talking about record attendances when the season kicks off this weekend. You are a match reporter for Leeds United Women. Just tell us a bit about the club.
The club actually first founded in 1989, and it's been under a lot of different guises. And in 2017, obviously the Leeds United owner Andrea Radrizzani, who had bought the club, brought back the Leeds United Women, went through various different hands, went through Lee Townend, and now the general manager Julie Lewis, who has worked at the FA, has done a fantastic job to bring back the Leeds United Women, to bring back the excitement for Leeds United Women. They had a really good season last year from where they were the year before, when they just battled relegation. They got to the County Cup semi-final, just losing out to Guiseley in the semi-final, and they started this year with high hopes of promotion, although they have had a couple of setbacks, especially what happened on Wednesday night against Bradford City Women, where they were 2-0 up. And unfortunately, the game had to be abandoned through a dreadful clash of heads through Chelsea Sanford of Bradford and Molly from Leeds United, Molly Hammond from Leeds United. But everything's in place. The train at Thorpe Arch. They've got a great manager in Dan O'Hearn, and they go again against Chorley on Sunday afternoon at Thorpe Arch.
Hey, Andrew, it's John here. Just a question.
Hi, John.
Can you tell us where they fit into the league structure of women's football?
Yeah, it's a bit different, obviously, with Women's Super League, because obviously you need the funding to get into the Women's Super League. They're in Division 1 North at the moment, so if they can get promoted this year, they'll be, I think, two steps below where the Women's Super League 1 would be. So it's just a question of keep going, and you never know if the men actually get promoted into the Premier League. There'll be more money there to spend, and hopefully spend it on the women as well.
Do you think there's any chance that they could go up this season?
I think they've got a chance from speaking to the players, speaking to the manager after every game. I think they've got an opportunity there. Yes, I had a setback the other week against Norton, where defensively I think Dan even admitted they're working at the races. But again, they've got a very good chance. If they play out playing in the first 40 minutes against Bradford before their injuries, they should be there or thereabouts. The hardest thing is, John, it's only one team that gets promoted, so you've got to be super consistent between now and sort of end of April, beginning of May time.
And have you noticed a particular peak in interest that's come off the back of the Women's World Cup?
Yes, certainly with the first game of the season, the first home game against Liverpool Feds, we got quite a lot of fans down at Thorpe Arch. We got over 250 fans down at Thorpe Arch. So the more times that they do play, the more games that they do win, the publicity will grow and the interest will certainly grow. And certainly, I think, following England's wonderful performance in the World Cup under Phil Neville getting to the semi-finals, possibly could have got to the final if not been for the missed penalty. I certainly think women's football is booming at the moment.
Mm. Do you think that the club have done enough to make the women's team accessible to the fans? Do you think the club could do more?
Certainly. They publicise the games on the social media every weekend. They publicise when the games are being played. It's free to get in, something at Thorpe Arch for home games. And the players are very accessible on sort of social media. Where they have the mascots every weekend as well, home and away. And I certainly think the club do an awful lot. And they've just started doing a women's show as well on LUTV. Certainly publicise women's game as well. So with a little bit of lady luck, pardon the pun, they will be there. And the club are doing everything in their power to make sure they do get into the next division.
Obviously, you hear quite a lot about the Bielsa system in the men's game. How would you describe the kind of style with which the women approach the game?
I think Dan certainly sort of changed the system from a flat back four. He's now gone three at the back, and they are trying to sort of replicate the way Marcello plays with the men's team. Obviously, he's taking a time to adapt as it does with any new system. But they try and play out from the back. They play some really good football in the opening game against Liverpool Feds, and they should have actually possibly won by more. Had a setback against Burnley in the Cup, where they conceded two goals in stoppage time, and it was just the disappointment against Norton last time out in the league, where defensively even Dan admitted they weren't at the best. So yeah, the signs are there. It's very early on in the season. They have only obviously now played two league games because of the abandoned game against Bradford City. So yeah, I certainly think the signs are there that they've got a great opportunity to get into the next league. And from speaking to the players after the games, that's the sole aim, is to get promoted to Northern League Premier League.
We're seeing certain clubs, Andrew, join together in terms of the women's team playing at Old Trafford, playing at Stamford Bridge, playing at the Etihad. Do you think that eventually that could be the case with Leeds, that the women might start to play occasional
games? Yeah,
we had
a game last year at Elland Road that Leeds won 1-0. Emma Bentley scored a lovely goal. And I think they've got a game booked in for to be played at Elland Road. I think next March time against Durham, Chesterley Street, or Durham Cestrin, should I say. And again, that'll be well publicised by the club, and I hope they get a few fans down there. And it's a great experience for the girls to sort of sample what it's like to play at Elland Road.
We've got to speak to you about the men's team as well, Andrew. First defeat of the season last weekend to Swansea. We've discussed it at length already on the show. Just give us your take on that particular performance.
I think if you look at it, the Leeds have got 13 points from 18. OK, we probably could have won all six had it been sort of clinical enough. And if you're going to lose a game, and look, there's no time, great time to lose a game, but you can lose a game just for an international break. You recharge your batteries. Yes, I had chances to win the game. But I'm certainly looking at this team and looking at this season that there's nothing in the league that frightens me at the moment. Fulham are a bit hit and miss. Cardiff are yet to start. Swansea could be a bit of a surprise package. Reading are up there. So, yeah, disappointing to lose against Swansea City. But if you'd ask any Leeds fan at the start of the season, you take 13 points from the first 18 available, you say, OK, so that's the hands off. And there's a perfect opportunity to put the record straight. A ground that, no choice, we don't do too well at an Oakwell a week on Sunday.
You're in and about the club quite a lot. What would you say is the change in atmosphere has been since Marcelo Bielsa has arrived?
I certainly think from last season, it was certainly the unknown quantity because nobody knew how the season would go, and it was a breath of fresh air with the style of football. He brought a culture into the club that they just kept going and kept going. You saw that in games away at Aston Villa and Blackburn at home over Christmas last year. And it's just a willingness to work for everybody else, and the attitude just amongst the players is absolutely fantastic. Yes, it was going to lose out to Derby County in the playoffs last season, but I just think it's just a breath of fresh air with Bielsa. And you see him when he walks off the coach and he's giving sweets to the school kids, and some things we've not seen at Elland Road for many a year. So yeah, it's all looking good, and I think they have got an opportunity this year to hopefully go all the way and avoid those dreaded playoffs.
Andrew, you are a stats man as well, as is John, my good friend beside me here. Just discuss in terms of stats and how you came about analysing stats and where you see it sitting in the game now.
Certainly from my perspective, it started way back in sort of 1993 through a guy called Seth Pod, who was a football community former Bradford City and Scarborough player. And I used to go on these football camps as a kid, done by Leeds United in the community, and Seth and all the people started asking me football questions, and it was just a retention of remembering scores and score lines. And then I got invited onto BBC Radio Leeds onto the Alvin Blossom show back at Christmas 93, and it just kind of went from there. And it's just a retention of information. I kind of got a photograph of Marie. I know from speaking to John quite a lot, he loves his statistics as well. And it's, as you've seen there, if someone can ask me a date or something like that for some unknown reason, I just picture games off the top of my head, and it's quite a surreal statistics to have, but it all helps. And obviously I've got my third book coming up in a few weeks' time.
Oh, I think we've lost Andrew Dalton now. That's a shame. I was going to ask him for one more. But listen, crikey. I fear that with that knowledge that he has, that bank of knowledge, that he just gets wheeled out by people. I did literally want to go through an entire list of fixtures
there. Trying
to
catch him out.
That is phenomenal, isn't it?
I can't even remember who we played in the last six games, and I've done a huge amount of analysis for each of them. So, yeah, it's incredible to hear someone just have that sort of retention where you can just pick it out of. You literally just pulled a date.
I just couldn't believe. I was thinking he's never going to get this. I like the fact that he is confused by Carabao Cup and FA Cup. He can't do all of that. Yeah. So it shows he's not superhuman.
It's disappointing, the Johnston Paint Trophy. How many games, how many memorable fixtures in the Johnston Paint Trophy getting shunned like that? But you know,
that is fun. I mean, when I think of Leeds games that I can remember, if you were to say to me a date, I couldn't give you a date. I think I could give you. He mentioned there in 1993, that was the end of the first Premier League season. I could give you Leeds' first game and Leeds' last game of that season. I remember, because obviously reigning champs. First game was against Wimbledon, 1-2-1 there. Lee Chapman scored the winner. And Warren Barton scored a bizarre goal for Wimbledon to equalise in that game. And then the final game of the season was 3-3 against Coventry, because, of course, Leeds didn't win a single game away from home that season. So I remember that, and I remember the pitch invasion with Steve Hodge and everybody else. But that's, I could tell you when they were, but I couldn't give you the dates.
So I think that's still pretty impressive. But yeah, interesting you said Leeds 3, Coventry 3. Because that's the first game that I went to, Leeds 3, Coventry 3. Not that game, but it was another game. It would have been in 98, probably, and Darren Huckabee scored a hat-trick.
Did he?
For Coventry.
Coventry,
yeah.
Okay,
and then,
of course.
And then came to Leeds and broke my small heart when I was like, this can't be. It was the first game I went to, and he scored a hat-trick. So there you go.
There we go.
Second game I ever went to, Mark Hughes was playing. That's how old I am.
Wow, well, that would have been for Southampton?
Everton.
For Everton, crikey, the short-lived spell at Everton. We could talk about this all day, chaps, but we're not going to, because you probably don't want to hear it. We're going to move on to some listeners' questions on the Leeds United Fan Show on Love Sport next.
Love Sport.
This is Love Sport on the Leeds United Fan Show. We've got about 12 minutes left. I'm Matt Beale. I'm joined by John McKenzie of All Stats, aren't we? And Jack Hardy is in the studio with us as well. We're going to move on to some listeners' questions, chaps. First one up is Barney Stewart. What are everyone's thoughts on the inconsistencies with fines in the game recently? Leeds fined for £200,000 for Spygate. Millwall fined £10,000 for racism. And obviously the recent news about Huddersfield and Paddy Power. I think that was £50,000, wasn't it? Thoughts on that one, chaps?
Well, I mean, it seems beyond doubt that the Spygate fine was excessive. I think everyone was a bit galled by it at the time, but I wonder if it sort of came from the fact that they were just sort of having to pluck something out of thin air. What was the clause that they got us under?
Good
for that
faith.
Good faith, that was it. And because there was nothing set in stone, there's no precedent there, they just knew they had to do it for something, it's now just seemed to have spiralled out of all proportion. Because when you compare it to something like that, it does seem very odd. But again, I don't think that there's anything else that really compares to it. Can you compare racism to, you know, something that betrays the faith of the game?
Yeah, I think the Spygate thing is interesting. Like you say, there's this good faith clause in the contract that everyone signs up as a team and in the AFL, and basically they want you to sign that so that you don't take the mickey with signing up and then pulling out right at the end. And so they sort of picked Leeds up on a really sort of arcane bit of law, and I think they were just, like you said, they were trying to get something out. And I think because Bielsa was so open about the way that he'd flouted the rules, I think they felt as though they had to make some kind of they had to make a lesson of him, basically. And so I think that's why that it was an overly excessive fine. £10,000 for racism is laughable, and I don't think anyone would disagree with that. And, you know, regardless of what you think of the Spygate issue, I think that has to be taken separately. When you're charging Huddersfield £50,000 for basically a PR stunt with a kit, and then £100,000 for racism, it does sort of raise questions about how well the EFL is functioning, really. But there is an undercurrent of EFL conspiracy theories amongst Leeds fans. I don't necessarily think that's the case. I think Leeds are a club that sort of invite that kind of treatment as well, to an extent, I think, because they are so prominent, they are so well known. But I'm not entirely convinced that the EFL were always out to get us. I think we didn't help ourselves all the time either.
Well, we're sort of weighed down by our sense of history as well, aren't we? And there's always a sense that everything's going to go wrong for Leeds eventually. And I suppose when people see a decision that goes against us, they think it's all trying to fit into this narrative that Leeds can't.
I think every fan group has that as well, to an extent, right? I just think that because we've had a sort of really bad run of luck, that it is easier for us to say, you know, that the referees don't give us penalties, the EFL give us the harsh fines, and they do everything they can to make us suffer. But yeah, I'm not convinced that there's anything in that beyond that. But the EFL, we mentioned before we came on air, the EFL have charged Derby. They're going to investigate Derby anyway in the way that they sort of use their stadium as a way of flouting FFP laws. It's not FFP,
allegedly,
but yeah, allegedly, of course.
Thank you, Jack.
Jack's got my back. Yeah. So you know, the EFL are clearly doing things to pick up on these things. I just think that it's just easier for us to feel as they were being hard done by.
I think the Derby County case, that's going to really be the litmus test of how harshly Leeds were punished, because that's going to be more of a comparable thing, I think. I mean, Radrazzani was right to point out that they're getting fined Leeds are getting fined £200,000, was it 250? I forget, but for standing on a public footpath. But if it is found that Derby have in some way broken the laws or the spirit of the game by selling their stadium to Mel Morris to avoid breaching financial fair play, and you know, they get fined less than that. I mean, that's where it's going to become quite an interesting source of debate. I think
there's flouting the laws, and then there's breaking the laws, and I think that's what that one comes down on, the side of breaking the law. So
adds another layer of the fact that it's Derby County as well, doesn't it? Binky from the Talking Shut podcast has been in touch. Are Leeds United's goal scoring problems down to the wingers? I know you've got a few stats here, John.
Yeah, I had a look. We had a chat again about this before we came on air, and we were saying, you know, on one hand, Leeds are doing everything right. apart from scoring goals. So a lot of the questions that we've had in have had that underlying context of, like, how do we get Leeds scoring more goals? In terms of the wingers, I think, you know, we've got to take it in terms of the context. We play a system where Pablo Hernandez plays as a, whatever you want to call him, a false seven or an inside forward. He drops in a little bit deeper. He doesn't get to the byline quite so much as the fullback on that side. And so as a result of that, you're not expecting Pablo Hernandez to score as many. But with Jack Harrison, he is getting into the box. He's getting into dangerous areas. So I had a look at, I sorted wingers, basically, for touches in the box, and Jack Harrison is so far is the highest on that list. He's had 38, I think. I can't actually read on my phone. He's had 38 touches in the box.
You've got Jack Harrison at 38, Camille Grzycki 35, Canos of Brentford at 33, Cavalier at Fulham 29, and Kadeem Harris 25.
So these guys get into the box and they're taking a lot of touches, but when you look at how many goals they've scored, Harrison only has the one goal so far. I think the only person on that list who has fewer goals is Sergi Canos, who doesn't have any, but everyone else has more goals than Jack Harrison. So in that sense, I think what we are seeing is that we're relying on a couple of players for goals. We should be, I think, relying maybe a little bit more on Jack Harrison to score. If he's getting in the box, having that many touches in the box, it's unlikely that he wouldn't score more. So, yeah, for me, I would like to see Harrison scoring more.
Do you think that Jack Harrison has something of a problem in the fact that the person behind him is switching from one game to the next, from Douglas, who's the sort of composed, fairly clinical left-back, to Alioski, who I think can at best be described as a bit of a loose cannon?
Yeah, we had a piece out this week on our Medium, so a blog post about looking at the differences in style between Douglas and Alioski. And Douglas is a lot more of a support player, so he interacts with Harrison a lot more, allows him to play 1-2s higher up the field. Alioski is a bit more direct and gets into the box. We saw that in the Swansea game. He had two chances that he didn't take particularly well. I think when you have two different players like that, then I don't think it will necessarily affect him. I just think that sometimes the style of Douglas probably suits him a little bit better. I think he likes to get the ball to his feet and then move, whereas with Alioski, I think Alioski is a bit more of a direct player and a little bit more of a presser, so I think he gets Harrison into scenarios that he doesn't like to be in so much as when he's with Douglas behind him. So
having rewatched the game today with a slightly cooler head, I mean, I couldn't help but notice that a lot of our chances seem to go missing, less from kind of the wings, but more breaking down the momentum around the box. So the Klitsch would stop, and just that beat was enough to let everybody flood the box. He did that two or three times. He'd just stop to try and wait for, you know, a winger to go past him or something like that. But that was exactly the space that Swansea needed to suddenly do what they were doing quite effectively for the games. Whereas I think one of our chances where we really did cut Swansea open was when Jack Harrison just did some nice one-touch passing. And sometimes there's just a bit too much dawdling. I mean, this has been the kind of millstone around our neck for most of the last season. We dawdle a bit too much. Mm. And the few times we did that kind of quick clinical passing, I mean, we saw it when Dallas was put in on goal against Stoke, you know, that really cuts people open. But sometimes we just sit back slightly too much. You saw it with Pablo, we just tried to walk it into the box a bit too much. And that just gives the defenders the time to throw everybody behind the ball, and then we get tied in knots.
Yeah, I think it's tough because I think a lot of what Leeds are about is about patient build-up, or at least not rushing the build-up phases. A lot of the time when teams are sitting deep against us, you don't even really have that option anyway. So the Dallas goal against Stoke was a classic example of being able to play at what's called a fourth man run. So you pass the ball between three players and then they find a fourth player in space. The only reason he could do that was because he was ahead of, I think it was James McLean at fullback. There was so much space there that he could make that pass. But most of the teams that we're playing against, in many respects, they're just sitting deep, and it means that you have to move the ball around in order to create
space. But quickly as well.
Space.
I mean, you see that with Man City. Of course. You know, that's exactly how that happens. how they do. It's very, very quick. But I fear that we sometimes just do what we do in midfield and sit back and try and let the chance unfold. But obviously, it just lets everyone get back into the box.
Yeah, there are a couple of players, I think, who really differentiate themselves from being truly great players because they don't hit the ball quickly. I mean, you mentioned Click, and he would be a name that I would mention. I think he gets into great positions, takes the ball down, and then it just feels as though he doesn't get the ball away quick enough on the shot. And you know, Adam Forshaw gets a lot of stick for his shooting, but I think one of the reasons why Adam Forshaw, he's shooting from distance a lot of the time anyway. So, but the other thing is that the ball arrives and he takes a shot quickly. He doesn't often take the touch. He'll try and take it first time. And I think that is a sign of a player who's played in the Premier League, who knows that you do get a benefit, particularly when you're shooting from taking the shot first time. And so he tries to get that shot away quickly. And I think there's a few of our players who just don't have that level of incisiveness on the shot timings.
Yes, I was saying earlier that I think sometimes Bielsa and how well he drills teams, it can flatter the players a bit. And I think the reality is sometimes we just don't have players that are of a high enough quality to just get in behind or just seize those moments. You know, we saw it with Alioski, who squandered a couple of really good chances quite early in the game just because he took things too quickly. And if you know, you just think, slow it down a bit.
Yeah, I think it's all about getting that balance right between being quick enough that you are incisive and being slow enough that you're not panicking. And that's why we do so many drill work on the training field, because you want to get people into a habit of doing it just naturally.
Yeah, absolutely. Just before we go, chaps, it's been a great show. We've had a couple of questions about the Nketiah-Bamford partnership. Now, Johnny said, is Bielsa likely to start Eddie and Bamford in the same team? If so, what will the shape likely be? And Phil Fraser has added, could Bamford play a Sheringham/Berbatov role behind Eddie, sort of a false 10?
I mean, it's difficult to know who you would drop. That's the thing. I mean, everyone sort of is a cog in the machine. And if you were to start doing it, I mean, firstly, it's something that Bielsa has never really done. He never tends to play with two strikers. So you can see it working, but it also is experimental in a way that I think would frighten Bielsa. You know, he likes to have everything so precisely. It seems like a bit too much of a roll of the dice to imagine. I mean, it could work. It could definitely work, because Bamford works hard. He chases the ball down, and he's really, really good at kind of, hounding people halfway up the pitch. So you can see him sitting quite nicely behind Nketiah, but I just don't think it's something that'll ever materialise.
Yeah, I don't think so either. If you were to play them as two strikers, he's going to have to play them in a 3-5-2. We've only seen him really do that against teams that play with two strikers themselves, a back three. So we did see him do that against Brentford at the end, but I think that it's always going to just be a we need to score a goal here option. It's always going to be like, let's throw everyone on for the last 10 minutes and see what we can do. So we've seen it there, but I just don't see it being a go-to option when unless the team are playing, the opposition are playing a certain way.
Lovely stuff. Well, thank you, chaps. It's been a thoroughly enjoyable hour. Jack Hardy.
Thanks.
And John McKenzie of All Stats, aren't we? It's a shame Andrew Dalton isn't here in the show just to answer one more question. Perhaps we'll get him on next week when we look ahead to that clash with Barnsley. It's the Leeds United Fan Show on Love Sport. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.